Chapter 49. He had taken three strides out the door when he heard a snow-muffled voice to his left shout, "There!" Unsure whether it was for the escaping speedboat or for him, Sam veered right along the curve of the building, then sprinted onto the lawn in the direction of the sextant statue. If Kolkoff and his partner were in fact after him, he didn't want to lead them back to Remy. When he saw the statue appear ahead, he dove into a head-first slide that took him behind the pedestal. He flipped onto his belly and looked back the way he'd come. 10 seconds passed. He heard the sound of feet pounding on gravel. Through the blowing snow, he saw two figures appear around the corner of the building and duck into the boathouse. Now the question was, how long would it take Kolkoff to reverse his own sabotage? The solenoid wire would take less than a minute, but returning the flywheel to its proper position would be trickier. The longer it took, the harder their automaton boat would be to find. 1 minute passed. 2 minutes. An engine growled to life and revved up. After a few seconds, it faded, moving out onto the lake. Sam got up, circled to the rear of the chapel, and found Remy crouched in the semi-darkness of the woodshed.
"I heard," she said. "The question is, how much time did it buy us?"
10, 15 minutes at least. In this weather, it'll take him at least that long just to find our decoy. Come on." He helped her to her feet. They climbed the steps to the rear door and pushed through. After the wind and snow, the relative warmth of the chapel felt like heaven. Compared to its grand exterior, the chapel was surprisingly simple, with reddish-brown stone tiles, scarred wooden pews, and white walls bearing framed religious icons. Above their heads, a balcony spanned the rear wall, while the vaulted ceiling was filigreed in light pink and gray paint. Tall mullioned windows on the side walls cast the interior in milky white light. They made their way down the center aisle to the far end of the chapel to a narrow door. Through it, they found a crescent-shaped room dominated by a spiral staircase. They started upward. After 30 or 40 steps, they found themselves at a wooden trapdoor secured by a sliding hasp and padlock. The padlock wasn't locked.
"Looks like somebody missed an item on the evacuation checklist," Remy said with a smile.
"Our good luck. Wasn't looking forward to defiling a Bavarian national landmark." Sam removed the padlock and slid back the hasp bolt. He carefully lifted the trapdoor, climbed through, then helped Remy up and closed it behind them. Aside from what little light seeped through the shuttered slit windows, the octagonal space was dark. They clicked on their flashlights and began looking around.
"Here," Remy said, kneeling down. "Got something."
"Here, too," Sam said from the opposite wall. He moved to Remy and inspected what she was shining her flashlight on. Stamped into the heavy timber molding beneath the window, nearly obliterated by layer upon layer of paint and lacquer, was a cicada symbol.
"Yours the same?" Remy asked.
Sam nodded, and they moved to the opposite side. A second cicada symbol was stamped into the wood.
"Why two?" he wondered aloud. "The line. A trio of coins. They must have meant it to apply to more than just the sextant."
It took them less than 30 seconds to find the third. The first two cicada symbols were situated near the front of the minaret, the third at the rear.
"Let's form it up," Sam said.
He crouched beside one of the stamps, and Remy did the same. Then they extended their arms, each pointing at the other, as well as the third stamp.
"Correct me if I'm wrong," Sam said, "but this is an isosceles triangle."
"It is indeed.
But which way is it meant to point?"
"If we extend the lines, the two at the front would point at the lake and into the mountains. The third one points inland, behind us." Sam lowered his arms as he sat down, back against the wall. His brows furrowed for a few seconds, then he smiled.
"What?"
Remy asked.
"The last part of the line," Sam replied.
"I knew something looked familiar." He dug into his pants pocket and came up with a St. Bartholomew's tour brochure. He flipped through it.
"There."
He handed it to Remy.
"Frigisinga."
Remy read,
Until 1803, the hunting lodge adjacent to the chapel was the private retreat of the Prince Provosts of Berchtesgaden, the last of whom, Joseph Conrad of Schraffenburg-Moos, had also served as the Lord Bishop of Freising.
I knew I'd read something about that during our research, Sam said. I mentally misplaced it. The 8th-century name for Freising was Frigisinga.
Okay. So this Schraffenburg-Moos fellow was here?
Not just here. He lived here. And we've already been there.
They climbed back through the hatch and down the spiral staircase, then retraced their steps through the chapel and out the back door and started down the path toward the woods. 5 minutes later, they were back at the cabin in whose loft they'd first sought shelter. They stopped at the post-mounted plaque beside the front door. Remy read, "Once served as the private hunting lodge and warming cabin for the last of Berchtesgaden's Prince Provosts, Joseph Conrad of Schraffenburg-Moos."
"Formerly a Frigisinga," Sam finished. They stepped inside. While most of the cabin was made of heavy timber, both the stanchion footers and the foundation, which rose 18 inches from ground level, were constructed of blocked stone.
"Let's check the stonework first," Sam said. "Timber can be easily replaced. Stone, not so much."
"Agreed. How are we on time?"
Sam checked his watch. 15 minutes since our rabbit ran. Knowing what they were looking for, they made quick work of the search, splitting up and walking hunched over along the walls, flashlights playing over the blocks.
"Grasshopper marks the spot," Remy called. She was kneeling beside a footer beneath the loft. Sam hurried over and crouched beside her. Stamped into the upper left corner of the block abutting the footer was the familiar cicada stamp.
"Looks like we're going to have to do a little defiling after all," Remy said.
"We'll be gentle." Sam looked around, then trotted over the open hearth fireplace, grabbed a steel poker from the mantel rack, and returned. He went to work. Though the poker's end was slightly spatula-shaped, it was still wider than the gaps between the stones, so it took a precious 10 minutes of inching the block outward before together they could pull it free. Remy reached her hand into the alcove.
"Hollow spot around the footer," she murmured. "Hang on."
She lay down on the floor and wriggled her arm into the hole until she was elbow deep. She stopped. Her eyes went wide.
"Wood."
"The footer?"
"No, I don't think so. Pull me out."
Gently, Sam grabbed her ankles and dragged her away from the wall. Her hand emerged from the alcove, followed by an oblong wooden box. Hand clenched like an eagle's talon, her fingernails were sunk 1/8 inch into the lid. Silently, they stared at the box for a long 10 seconds. Then Remy smiled.
"You owe me a manicure."
Sam smiled back. "Done." The heft of the box told them it wasn't empty, but they checked anyway. Snug in its bed of straw and enveloped in its oilskin wrappings was another bottle from Napoleon's lost cellar. Sam closed the lid and said, "I don't know about you, but I think I've had enough sightseeing for one day."
"I'm with you."
Sam stuffed the box into his rucksack and they stepped outside into the clearing. This far from the boathouse, they wouldn't have been able to hear the sound of a returning speedboat, so they moved quickly but carefully, stopping frequently to hide and watch until finally they were back at the chapel.
"Almost there," Sam said.
Remy nodded and hugged herself. Sam embraced her and rubbed his hands vigorously on her back.
"We'll be drinking warm brandy in no time." "Now you're singing my song," she replied.
They circled left around the chapel, following the straight and curved walls until they reached the front of the building. Sam stopped 10 feet short, signaled for her to wait, then Crab walked ahead and peered around the corner. After a few seconds, he pulled back and returned to her.
"Anything?"
Remy whispered. "Nothing's moving, but the door's partially shut. I can't tell how many boats are inside."
"How about the landing?"
"Nothing there either. But with the snow."
"Shh."
Remy cocked her head and closed her eyes.
"Listen."
After a few seconds, Sam heard it. Faintly, somewhere in the distance, came the buzzing of an engine.
Somebody's out there, Remy said.
They wouldn't have just given up on the decoy, Sam reasoned. They're either still chasing it or on their way back.
Agreed.
It's now or never. After one last check around the corner, Sam motioned for Remy to move up. Hand in hand, they broke from cover, sprinted to the boathouse, and docked inside. In addition to their decoy boat, the right-hand boat was gone. Remy jumped aboard the remaining boat and settled into the driver's seat while Sam set aside his backpack, then lifted the engine cover, quickly installed his makeshift solenoid wire, and bent the brush arm back into place. He closed the engine cover, shimmied under the dash, and hot-wired the ignition.
Okay, he said, crawling back out. Sam, the door!
Sam spun. A figure was rushing through the boathouse door. Sam caught a fleeting glimpse of the man's face. Kolkoff's partner. Turning, squaring up through the door, his hand came up holding a snub-nosed revolver. Sam didn't think, but reacted, snatching up the nearest object, a bright orange life vest, and hurling it. The man batted it away, but it had bought Sam the second he needed to leap to the dock and charge. He slammed into the man, and they crashed back into the wall. Sam grabbed the man's gun wrist and twisted hard, trying to break the delicate bones there. The gun roared once, then again. The man was a professional. Instead of fighting the torque on his wrist, he went with it, twisting his body while swinging his left arm in a tight hook that slammed into Sam's temple. Sparks burst behind Sam's eyes, but he kept his grip on the man's wrist, then got his right arm inside the man's punching arm and wrapped him in a bear hug. Vision still swimming, Sam jerked his head back and slammed it forward. The head butt found its mark. With a muffled crunch, the man's nose shattered. The gun clattered across the planks. With a grunt, the man levered himself against the wall, and together they stumbled backward. Sam felt his foot step into empty air. He felt himself falling. He took a gulp of air, then plunged into the water.